Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Business owners across the country are grappling with President Trump's tariff threats. Eli Biffert's president of a lumber and hardware company in Milwaukee. He says the threatened lumber tariffs would increase home building prices by about $2,500.
You know, nobody likes uncertainty. It's hard on the producers. It's hard on home builders. It's hard on prospective home buyers. It isn't good for anybody.
President Trump has threatened tariffs and sanctions against Russia if there's no commitment to a deal to end the war in Ukraine. Overnight, Russian strikes killed at least 14 people in Ukraine and injured 40 others. A Newark, New Jersey police officer was killed and others in critical condition after a Friday shooting. Authorities say the suspect, now in custody, is 14 years old. Gene Hackman's wife died of a rare illness transmitted by infected rodent droppings, and authorities in New Mexico say Betsy Hackman likely died days before the 95-year-old actor died of heart disease. This is ABC News. One person's been arrested, and authorities in Louisiana are searching for more in connection with an alleged fraternity hazing incident that led to the death of an engineering student. ABC's Whit Johnson has details.
Last month, 20-year-old Southern University junior Caleb Wilson was unresponsive when a group of men dropped him off at a Baton Rouge emergency room. Court documents state the men allegedly told hospital staff that Wilson collapsed after being struck in the chest while playing basketball, but investigators say that was a lie. 23-year-old Caleb McRae facing manslaughter and criminal hazing charges as authorities search for at least two more suspects.
Volkswagen's recalling up to 177,439 Atlas and Atlas Cross Sport SUVs. It's because of a loose engine cover that could melt and cause a fire. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration says the owners of the affected models will be notified by April 18th so they can be replaced. I'm Brian Clark, ABC News.
My part-time service in the Army National Guard makes it possible for me to be more for the community I call home. My training helps me at work when I lead by example. The Army National Guard has taught me the value of showing respect to those I come in contact with each day. My service also allows me to be there for my community in ways others can't. I help my hometown recover after nature strikes. My service in the Army National Guard allows me to keep my country and those I care about safe from threats. I also work with a network of professionals that help me succeed and accomplish the mission. Plus, the Army National Guard education benefits make getting a higher education a reality. Being an Army National Guard soldier makes living and serving in my community more rewarding every day. Learn how you too can live and serve part-time, close to home by visiting NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard, aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
I'm James Kelly with WLAK News. Your news in depth. Find it in the news section on the WLAK website at lakeair.radio.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. There's a new federal approach to handling bird flu. Mike Moen reports.
Last week, Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins released a five-pronged strategy and $1 billion investment to keep avian flu in check and reduce rising egg prices. The new measures focus largely on fixing on-farm biosecurity gaps, as well as push for a new poultry vaccine. Megan Davis with Johns Hopkins University says it's encouraging, but she worries about the lack of specifics in pivoting away from current methods of handling infected birds where farmers depopulate their flocks.
Our current quarantine and stamping out policy has been in place for quite some time. There's a reason it exists. These birds get really sick, so their animal welfare issues are not going to recover.
The federal move comes at a chaotic time for avian flu response. Under the Trump administration's federal spending crackdown, several key bird flu workers were fired by the USDA, and the department is now struggling to rehire them. Davis says the U.S. lags behind other countries with collaborative teams of experts to holistically assess outbreaks. She warns a patchwork investment won't make up for huge federal workforce losses of key researchers.
I have major concerns moving forward that we will not have good eyes on this virus, and that if it would, heaven forbid, start to really develop a human-to-human transmission chain, then that's a huge step down that path towards pandemic.
In the past 30 days alone, the virus has infected more than 107 flocks nationally, affecting nearly 13 million birds, that according to the USDA. So far, 70 people have been infected, and one person has died from avian flu in the U.S.
That's Mike Moen reporting, and I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. You're listening to Civic Media News.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Today, a few flurries, then some sunshine. It'll be windy with a high around 46 degrees. Mostly clear tonight, a low of 27. Sunshine, 50 for Sunday. 61 and sunshine on Monday. Mostly sunny, mid-40s on Tuesday.
It's 24 right now.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. We'll take a look back at the news of the weekend and also discuss Ukraine. Why what's happening there matters here in Wisconsin. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Up North News Radio.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Portions of Native Roots Radio may be pre-recorded.
You're listening to the best of Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake. I'm your host, Wakunjahade, Distant Thunder. My colonized name is Robert Pilot. We discuss national and local Native American news and events. As we all know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
It's a good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut, he need cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunjahade. A kadagi to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local, national, Native news and events, and as you know, Chujunk, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Yes, you are right, Dega. This portion of the show is supported by JS Bean Factory off Randolph Avenue in St. Paul. Only the good stuff keeps us awake.
Heck yeah, we're awake. And hey, we have our friend, Dr. Stately, who's president and executive officer at Native American Community Clinic here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis. And we got a lot to talk about. Great to see you, Dr. Stately.
Bonjour. How are you?
Doing good, you know, putting one foot in front of the other. I was at the Capitol today doing some testifying about mascots, and it was a good time to be had to all. Ho-wa.
That's awesome.
Yeah, there's things going on, Dr. Stately. I mean, the Congress and the House members.
There are so many things going on. It's crazy.
Can we let our people know what's going on, especially with the medical end?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think one of the biggest things that I wanted to draw everybody's attention to is like what's going on in Congress right now. In both the House and the Senate around, you know, the efforts to make significant, massive cuts in Medicaid and Medicare, which I think will really have a very big impact on, you know, all Indigenous communities, many of them sort of rely on Medicaid and Medicare support to deliver critical healthcare services to their communities, whether they're on tribal lands or in their urban areas like where I work, Minneapolis. But I think the other thing that's really scary and frightening about this thing is, like, I saw an alert earlier today, like 880 million dollars, or no, is that billion dollars?
That's billion.
Yeah, billion. $880 billion projected. Efforts to cut, to save, you know, and reduce the debt load that the United States has. You know, of course, they're not going to slash it over, you know, out of 1 year. This is over, like, you know, several years, right? And it's like a 10-year period. But, this is like, so what's happening here is that the Republican Party, who currently controls the House, the Senate, and also the administrative branch, are all trying to give very rich people tax breaks and tax cuts, and they plan to finance that on the by doing these kinds of things, cutting Medicaid and Medicare. And I think it's really important that one of the things I think that is kind of befuddling to me, actually, that I just don't really seem to understand, which is that, the constituents that put him into office probably are going to be harmed by that significantly as well, tremendously, right?
Right.
And, those poor... those poor communities, those communities that are part of the grain belt, the middle, the Dust Bowl, the whole all the way into the southern states, they are gonna, they have a lot of old people. Florida, what are all those Florida's 60-70% maybe greater elders. What are they gonna do when they can't have can't get their health care through Medicare? And I think so part of it is baffling to me, this idea that they're proposing these things, because it'll significantly impact, this is not a partisan issue, this is a human issue, this is all human beings who don't have access to good health care, who can't afford private insurance, who can't afford health care services that other people who are in the upper middle class, upper class, and the oligarchs that are running around here doing all this crazy business, trying to slash and save money. What's really interesting is, I don't know if you've been tracking the Doge website, and their receipts.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody else, but I mean, I'm gonna just kind of drill it down here. If I came home from the store after buying a loaf of bread and I gave my mother a receipt that said, show me the coupon you used to save $10 off that loaf of bread, and we only had to pay a nickel for it.
Right.
Well, that's more like eggs. Eggs is a good analogy here, because eggs will be about $10 a dozen here soon.
Right.
That is just not. That's like napkin math. That's not even real math.
Right.
And it's not money we're saving today. It's money that we're saving in 5 years and in 10 years. Mm-hmm. And it's money. And it's not even the largest part of the budget, actually. The reason they have to slash and cut Medicare and Medicaid is because, and Social Security is next.
Right.
Is because those are the lion's share of our budgets, the federal government budgets. It's not, the FFA, and it's not, the CDC or NIH. Those are little teeny tiny budget numbers, right? Like less than 1-4% of the budget, or less than that collectively, right?
Yeah.
But they don't want to cut the military budget, and they don't want to rein in military spending. They don't want to rein in those kinds of things. They want to make big tax breaks for people who are already very super wealthy, don't pay enough taxes anyway, when giving right. more tax breaks. And it's just crazy making. And none of the promises he made is he coming good on. He's like, none of them.
No
mass deportation yet, right?
Right.
Your eggs and your gas and your bread and everything else is more expensive today than it was 6 weeks ago.
Well, and two, with all these job cuts, job rate in the economy is going to be going down because people don't have work. I mean, it's
we're headed for a recession, if not a depression.
Right. Well, one of the things, too, we have a call to action, and I wonder if our listeners could get that phone number. Haley, I believe it's 1-866-426-2631. That's 1-866-426-2631. Leave a 30-second message, and what the call could mean the difference between families getting care they need or losing access to doctors' prescriptions and critical support. Keep the pressure on for sure.
Yeah. Hold them accountable. Let them know that, like, you know, you vote and you're going to vote in the midterm. Perhaps you voted for them this time, right? Mm-hmm. Let them know, like, you plan to change your vote if, like, these things happen. You know, this is going to impact, I don't know, I think about my whole entire family and all the people I know. I know several people here in the space where I live, Briar Lake, Shakopee area. Several mm-hmm. non-Indigenous people, you know, people that, you know, are middle class, who work for hard for their money, just like everybody else. And they will, you know, I have a couple of friends of mine who are cancer patients. And I think about, like, our inability to do things like research cancer, innovative cancer cures and those kinds of things. Like, these are things that are, we're going back in time here to the early 1900s, right. If not the 1800s. So,
yeah, well,
it's crazy, you know, making.
It is, and I appreciate you talking about this. Talk a little bit more. I know we have a short time with you today. We are with Dr. Stately, and he is the president and executive officer of Native American Community Clinic here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis. And we're talking budget cuts and what we can do as listeners and people out there in the listening to us, what they can do. It's a call to action. We'll be right back. This is Native Roots Radio.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK. Amory's home for Nightlight with Peach Schwaba.
Celebrate the women who have helped shape the world as we honor Women's History Month with powerful stories of Wisconsin's own. We remember the legacy of Vell Phillips, the trailblazing civil rights leader. He's also the first African-American woman elected to the Wisconsin State Assembly. Phillips was born in Milwaukee, and though she faced both racial and gender barriers, she remained strong in her fight for equality. She helped pass groundbreaking laws to desegregate public housing while also fighting for voting rights. Her courage and determination wasn't just for Wisconsin, but for the nation. And Phillips' legacy continues to inspire those who believe in justice, showing that one voice can spark change. These are the stories continuing to inspire all of us every day. And as we honor them, we will also recognize the powerful women who are still writing history. I'm Terry Barr.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hi, this is Representative Charisse Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Native American Community Clinic on Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis, honoring health and tradition.
Hey, we are here with Dr. Stately, President and Executive Officer of Native American Community Clinic here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, and we're talking about these massive cuts by Medicaid, MA. We need you to call your representatives at 1-866-426-2631. And I'm calling as a constituent to urge you to fight to keep all Medicaid funding. Cuts to Medicaid would immediately hurt pregnant women, babies, children, families, and our communities. Welcome back, Dr. Stately.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I do think it's really important that we all use our voice. Creator gave us a voice for a reason. It's, you know, not just to yell at our kids. No, I'm just kidding. but to call Congress and, you know, call your senators, call your congressional representatives, and let them know your concerns. I think it's really important. I think one of the things that's profoundly interesting for me, interesting to me, is, like, you know, we're, what, 6 weeks into the new presidency, mm-hmm. thereabouts, right? And in 6 weeks, the scale of what has happened here in his administration and the impact that's having on people across the United States is really alarming. And what's remarkable is the lack of significant outrage that I'm not seeing in comparison to, like, his first term. Where we're at today is significantly much more demonstrably different than where we were 8 years ago. And I think one of the things that's concerning to me is like, we need to like encourage people to stand up and speak up. Mm-hmm. out. You know, I read this article, I think it was in the Atlantic, might've been in the New Yorker, talked about how, you know, Hitler came into office, you know, he was voted into office mm-hmm. through a democratic process, right? And yep. within six weeks, and here we are, we're at 6 weeks now, within 6 weeks, he was able to dismantle that democracy and take control of the entire country. And we all know what he ended up doing, right?
Right.
And so democracy dies when people don't speak up. Democracy dies when people don't stand up.
Well, I've seen a lot of people standing up. I just think we're not seeing it on the mainstream media again. That's a yes. big problem mm-hmm. that's normalized all this. I know we'll see little TikToks and little videos of maybe booing J.D. Yeah. Vance, but there's stuff going on. We just aren't yeah. getting the press, I don't think.
The press is all, you know, the majority of the press, or the majority of that field is focused, you know, their leadership, of course, also very wealthy people, right? You know,
yep.
people who own big, huge news corporations, you know, and such. Those right. folks are interested in protecting themselves, protecting their shareholders, mm-hmm. and, you know, and protecting their dividends and all those things. They're not interested in the American people, right? It's like
right.
And they're all afraid of him. They're all afraid to go up against him because, you know, he's going to come after them, right? And, right. you know, I was born and raised in the 1960s and 70s where people were not afraid of those things.
Right. right?
And it's just remarkable to me that, you know, that we're at the, you know, that we're at the place where we're at. Who was that woman that owned the Post? Or not the Post, the Washington Post, yeah, that Jeff yeah. Bezos now owns, that kind of at the last minute decided not to endorse anybody, not even Kim.
Exactly.
Like, yeah. like that woman who was like in a force to recognize, Meryl Streep portrayed her in a movie. Amazing mm-hmm. woman. She went up against big, big, huge, you know, forces in her career to say like, no, this is where we stand. These are our values and we're gonna print this, right? Mm-hmm. And like, where is the backbone of these people? They have no backbone.
Exactly. And we're grateful here to be on AM 950 and then the Civic Media Network all over Wisconsin and the United States. But, you know, we've always said that when, nine companies own, or eight companies own 95% of the media. And that's why yeah. I have issue with the mainstream media, because look what happened to MSNBC. They only have one African-American reporter and he's on, or a news person, and he's on Saturday Night Live.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fake yeah. news, really. It's this comedy.
Yeah.
So all the African-Americans are gone yeah. because they folded yeah. under that.
It's we're living in very troubling times, and, you know, and the thing that's really, you know, I think that things get cast, like, you know, folks like Trump and like, you know, the conservative Republican Party, they cast things as, you know, they play on things that are, they feed the culture wars, make us fight against each other. They're really good at that, right? I mean, we know that as people who've been colonized for over 500 or 600 years, right? It's like, mm-hmm. we understand the whole divide and conquer thing. Well, they're doing that to the American people. They're making, you know, this group be afraid of that group and fight with that group. And they're flaming fears and insecurities, and they're capitalizing on it. Capitalizing in the sense that they're actually making money on it.
Right. right? Well,
they're
even if it's
stacking their bricks of gold while they're doing it.
Even if everything stopped today, I'm sure they're so much more richer than they were 6 weeks ago. It's going to be yeah. mind blowing.
Yeah. You know, it's mind blowing. It's mind blowing to me. Like, you know, that we're 6 weeks in, and I think Elon Musk barely just now declared some of his conflicts, right? and those aren't even, that's just like a couple of them, but so many more. You know, the man has like somebody, I was like listening to somebody on the air the other day, they were like, well, he has $1 million contracts. He has multiple $1 million contracts. You know, right. SpaceX, you know, he's got like all these, you know, it's just crazy.
His satellites.
To think that like, you know, there's three or four people who are controlling, you know, all of the financial interests and all of the things that are being decided right now. And we barely hear a peep about it.
Right. Well, that's why it's important that we talk about it. I know the show before us talks about it. I know this network talks about it constantly from 8 o'clock on. And we just need to see how this last boycott on February 28th worked out and go from there, because there's a playlist of more things to do. I just hope that our Democrat relatives that are in Washington really don't work on a 3-day week and are on top of this every day, because it's coming at us every day. And so how we can support them and how we can push them, I think is making a phone call to them.
Yeah. Calling the people that are standing up against them, encouraging them to continue to do it. Calling the representatives in your district who are voting for these things, maybe because they don't completely understand. Maybe they only, you know, I think there's just a lot of false narratives that people don't pay attention to, right? The lion's share of people who are in Medicare and Medicaid and Medicare across the country are
in the red states.
They're in the red states. It's like you voted for this man. He was going to make your life less expensive to live. He was going to ensure your well-being, and he is not doing that, and they are not doing that. And, you know, I hate when I'm sold a lemon and it's I'm told it's a watermelon. So you should hate it too. And I think that you should speak up and say it. So, and I think that that's kind of where we're at. It's really scary and frightening.
It is. And we appreciate you coming on and talking about this, because this is broadcast all over the world. And, we're standing up, AOC standing up, Bernie standing up. We got to support these people that are not taking any crap.
No. And I'm partly saying it too, because NAC is a federally qualified healthcare center, which is part of the system-wide network of primary care healthcare centers, community healthcare centers all across the United States. There's about 17,000 of us, 14,000, something like that. But we are the foundation of healthcare. Like, we saw this in the pandemic, right? How hard it was for you to get healthcare at your hospital, or how hard it was for you to get healthcare at these other places where you would maybe normally think that you could go and get healthcare. But you know what stayed open, and just barely? Some of us closed. Some of us, like NAC, we were working. We were barely initially at the beginning until it rained money and we started getting some. We stayed open. We got vaccines to people. We got people treated for COVID and a few other things, and we kept people well. What's going to happen is Medicaid and Medicare slashes are going to harm community health centers. And many of them will close, and people will have less access to basic primary care, preventative care that keeps them well, keeps their families well, keeps them alive, and keeps them functioning and able to go to work, take care of their kids, take care of their families. And that should concern everybody, no matter what color you are, no matter whether you're blue or red, and whatever you vote, everybody should be concerned about this.
Well, Dr. Stately, big peeny geeky, thank you coming on and speaking your truth. And we need to hear that, and we need to talk about this every day on Native Roots Radio. So I appreciate you and all the work you do in the community, but also all the great work you do for us here on Native Roots Radio.
Miigwech, pinoy.
Hey, we'll be right back. This is Native Roots Radio, Haley.
Ho-wa. Stay with us. Ho-wa.
You're listening to Lake Air WLAK, Amory's home for Matt Nair on air.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Business owners across the country are grappling with President Trump's tariff threats. Eli Biffert's president of a lumber and hardware company in Milwaukee, He says the threatened lumber tariffs would increase home building prices by about $2,500.
You know, nobody likes uncertainty. It's hard on the producers, it's hard on home builders, it's hard on prospective home buyers. It isn't good for anybody.
President Trump has threatened tariffs and sanctions against Russia if there's no commitment to a deal to end the war in Ukraine. Overnight, Russian strikes killed at least 14 people in Ukraine and injured 40 others. A Newark, New Jersey police officer was killed and others in critical condition after a Friday shooting. Authorities say the suspect, now in custody, is 14 years old. Gene Hackman's wife died of a rare illness transmitted by infected rodent droppings, and authorities in New Mexico say Betsy Hackman likely died days before the 95-year-old actor died of heart disease. This is ABC News.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
It's the Bucks against the Magic. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports NBA. The Bucks with back-to-back games at home. Tonight against the Orlando Magic. Tomorrow night against the Cavaliers. Milwaukee has won four in a row. Bucks shooting guard A.J. Green.
I feel like we just come together more as a team and are continuing to trust each other more and have been putting a lot of focus on that. And so I think you've been able to see that for us and how we played. And it's just going to be continuing to take next steps with that, you know, on defense and continuing to do it consistently on offense.
NFL, only four players have played 16 years or more in Green Bay. Bart Starr, Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers, and kicker Mason Crosby, who retired yesterday.
I am a culture, team, relationship guy. That's why Green Bay was perfect for me. You know, I chose to stay here over and over again. Never went to free agency until my last year. I chose this place as it chose me, and God's plan was set in place a long time ago that this was where I was supposed to be, and I'm thankful for that every day.
That's Mason Crosby with Sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Today, a few flurries, then some sunshine. It'll be windy with a high around 46 degrees. Mostly clear tonight, a low of 27. Sunshine, 50 for Sunday. 61 and sunshine on Monday. Mostly sunny, mid-40s on Tuesday. Currently, 23 degrees.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. In a brief to the North Carolina Court of Appeals, a bipartisan group of former county election directors urged the court to reject a claim that as many as 65,000 voters were ineligible last November. And a former state Supreme Court justice is arguing in another appeals case that gerrymandering by the state legislature is akin to stuffing the ballot box. We followed the claims from state Supreme Court candidate Jefferson Griffin that as many as 65,000 registered eligible voters had incomplete registrations in a race he lost by 734 votes to incumbent Justice Allison Riggs. The race is the only unresolved election in the country. In late February, a bipartisan group of 42 former county election directors filed a brief outlining why the voters should be considered valid and concluding, "The citizens of North Carolina who obey the laws and the direction of the elections administrators should not have their votes discarded." In another North Carolina case, former state Supreme Court Justice Bob Orr is arguing in state appeals court that the legislature's gerrymandered voting districts manipulate election outcomes. By packing voters by party into a district, he argues, it violates the state constitution's guarantee of free elections with a fair count. Orr told the Charlotte News and Observer, if they can't stuff the ballot box, how can they stuff the voter pool? We have more on both cases at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Brian Lomax, defend the vote.
The SAVE Act will make it harder for all Americans to vote. Now you need a passport. Wisconsin specific, 5 million people don't have a passport. Now it's $130 per passport.
Even if you can afford to get a passport, that is a months-long process. Unless you planned a year ahead, you're not going to be able to vote.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Pat Kreitlow.
I'm practicing my quiet voice because Monday is my wife's birthday and she's sleeping in. One of the occupational hazards of trying to do a radio show from home.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Oh, this is Dallas Goldtooth and you're listening to the Native Roots Radio.
Hoka Hicha.
Wicha.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Native American Community Development Institute, or NACD, in Minneapolis.
Hey, really excited to have this artist on, Jennifer White. Jennifer White's owner of Post Pilgrim Gallery in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. And you just had an art show up here in the Twin Cities, and I was able to get in there and see. Haley met you. So big peeny geeky, thank you so much for coming on.
Of course. I'm happy to be here. Thanks.
Right on. Hey, talk a little bit about the beginning of your career here. I see that you started in 2010.
Yeah, well, it started out pretty bare bone. Didn't have a whole lot of fat to work with. Painting has always been a passion, and it's kind of strange, but over the years, working with all of these phenomenal artists and organizations, it's not only improved like my work, but it's improved who I am as a human being and my consciousness into the pride I have for being a Native woman is just, it gets stronger every day. I'm honored and privileged to be able to do what I do.
Well, we're really honored to have you on, and your art is very recognizable, and that's a really good thing, because it's like, that is something, you know, I'd like to have on my wall. I know, Haley, you got to meet her. It was amazing for the opening at All My Relations Art Gallery.
Yeah, I think I got a little preview sneak peek for the Native media that was there that showed up, and got to talk with Jennifer for a bit. And I think we really hit it off. I think we had a lot of good laughs together, and we were talking about your art, and I think it was just so beautiful. I like to go to a lot of the exhibits at All My Relations, and yours really stuck out to me. I would just say because you really portray a lot of Native women portraits in your work, and I've talked to you too about how it's been kind of like a self identity thing too, that you see through in your work. You kind of see some of yourself too, but I love the bright colors too. There's a lot of positivity that shows through in your work.
Thanks. Well, working painting women, it's Frida Kahlo said it best, like, are these all self-portraits? I get that question quite a bit. The only reason why that is because I see my face every day, and I know it better than anything in the whole wide world. So if it is me, it is me. But at the same time, the paintings that I do, I paint every day, and my mood, especially now with what's going on with this Joker in office right now, my work has been lit. Like, it's all about empowerment. It's about the distress cry of American Indian people and how we are not being heard or being seen. And once again, our culture is being crushed by these people that don't take the time to understand who we are. So it's my obligation and my duty and my work to recreate who we are as people's perception of Indian people. And it gets rough, it gets kind of mean sometimes, but at the same time, I really feel as though now is the time for the cry of the women, the cry of the men, these strong, powerful, influential Native people to speak up and be present and be heard. It's our time. It is our time to be lit. It is our time to be set on fire, man.
Right on. And that shows in your work, and it's going to show more in your work. I really love how you said that. You know, I'm wondering, you know, we were talking about this. My wife paints in acrylics too. That's hard because of the layering you have to do. Is that right?
That's the best part, man. Oil's so slow and it stinks, you know, and it's hard to get off your hands. But with acrylic, you can really beat it up. You can layer it. You can water it down. You can keep it full blast color. You can cut into it, and it dries so quickly. I appreciate acrylic. Watercolor's a little fussy as well. I'm not into it. One thing I would like to try is sculpting with clay and then bronzing it. But that's, you know, when I'm an old lady, I'll try that.
Gotta try them all.
That's right. Oh, yeah. Well, Haley paints in watercolors, so there is a big difference,
bossy.
Right, Haley?
That's difficult.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Watercolor, yeah. I'm always like, you can't make mistakes because the water's gonna do its own thing. But I like to work
it's
with
really
water too
not
because
forgiving.
Water's life. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, good. That one mini Choney there.
You're in
there, Haley.
That's great.
So how can people, because again, we're all over the country and on 30 stations in Wisconsin, in the Twin Cities, Michigan, Illinois, we should name them off someday when we start out the show, but how can people see your work via internet, or do you have a Facebook or an Instagram?
Oh yeah. Well, I have a Facebook that's exclusive. I update that daily. I'm on Instagram, but I'm an old lady. I'm not really into it. It's not my forte. Word of mouth is by far my most powerful advertising agent. I believe bad news spreads quickly, but good news goes to the right ears. So I don't do a whole lot of advertising. Word of mouth is very, very, very important to me. And if you own my work, you've probably met me, and I appreciate that kind of gatekeeping on my part. I don't want to be a whore with my work. I want to know who I'm selling to.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, I got to say this too. I've always wanted to start a business, offshoot business called Burning Wagons Logistics or something. But I really like your Post Pilgrim name. Tell us how that came about.
We're still here. You didn't get rid of us. I like it because it's tongue-in-cheek. I'm from South Dakota, so it's kind of like cowboy country. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a little bit boss hog in the way that, you know, don't fuss around with me, man. Like, I'm a proud Indian girl, and we're going to be here for a while. And my blood with my children will be here for a while, and I have two painters. My girls are painters and they're fabulous. They're award-winning as well, but like, they're going to be here well after I'm done. And I hope I have grandchildren that can do this. There's a little bit of nepotism involved, but like, man, I earned it. I can do that. And I think we should all strive for that as a people. We need to build our own businesses. We need to make them sustainable, and we need to make them with purpose. And we need to be able to bridge that gap between native and non-native, because in that fluffy area, everybody gets to be seen and everybody gets to be heard. Having a foothold in each of those worlds helps me creatively, and it helps me in my business, but it also allows me to weed out a bunch of suckers that shouldn't be looking at my work, both Indian and non.
Wow, good words. And just truth be told, Haley's my chujunk. She's my niece, so we're keeping.
Oh, there you go. That's what I'm talking about. You get it. You get it. You know.
That kind of leads into my next question. So you talked about your kids, and hopefully you have some talented artistic grandkids as well. Do you have like your older generations or anyone that you looked up to that kind of made you into the artist that you are now?
Oh, absolutely. Well, my grandmother is a big one. She was a quilter, but she was a little teeny tiny, horribly bossy, spooky, a Rick of Rob woman. She was tiny, but man, when she talked, you listened. I am honored to be able to learn from her and my aunts on how to hold your space and walk into a room with confidence and self-assurance that you are exactly where you're supposed to be. And then on the flip, so the male energy that I got growing up was from my gay uncle, and he's a raging homo. I love him with all my heart. I mean, we grew up listening to opera, tea parties, and I got to see my uncle fight for his space in a completely different way as a homosexual man. Mm-hmm. And that kind of bravery, that empowerment, like that sunk into my skin, man. That kind of confidence was osmosis. It went straight from him right into my heart. And then learning how to kind of navigate my way on how people looked at my family, being Native, being queer, just being different. I got to observe like the kind of way I wanted to present myself to the world. And it was a true, honest gift to grow up almost exclusively non-Native community, because I got to be behind the lines. I got to know how these guys think. And it's very powerful to be able to navigate through those worlds together. As I was saying earlier, it shows in my work all the time. But I'm married to a white boy, you know, and I love him with all my heart. He's a big, tall Norwegian drink of water. And I have so much pride in him for being able to give me my room to do what I do and just be there to support what I do as a woman and as an Indian. And he is also teaching the community how to behave as well. Mm-hmm. So it's a powerful thing, and I'm very honored, and I'm very, very, very blessed with the family and people I have around me.
Wow, right on. Haley, did you have another question?
No, I think I was able to meet your husband actually at the gallery exhibit. I think you had your whole family come and from out of town, and they were helping pull in pieces. And they were very supportive. I know we have a minute left here, but coming up in the next segment, I would love to talk a little bit more about your gallery and everything going on at Post Pilgrim.
Absolutely.
Wow. This is awesome, Haley. What a great guest. Hey, we're going to be right back. This is Native Roots Radio, and I love Post Pilgrim Gallery. I love that. Right next to Burning Wagon Soda Shop. We'll be right back after this important message.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Governor Tony Evers has released his budget, calling this the most pro-kid budget in state history. This is now the fourth time that Evers has put forth a budget proposal, and the three prior were all met with a similar fate. Republicans in the legislature rejected it entirely. Again this year, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss called the budget dead on arrival. To a certain extent, this is what we've come to expect from this era of divided government in Wisconsin. In previous years, Evers has eventually signed Republican-authored budgets and used his line-item veto powers to make certain changes. But could he play hardball this time around and threaten to veto the entire budget? Is there anything in this pro-kid budget that has to be there? Things like education funding, or clean water protections, or Medicaid expansion? With everything going on in Washington, now might be the right time for Evers to fight for these proposals and fight for Wisconsinites in any way he can.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
You're listening to Lake Air WLAK, Amory's home for Up North News Radio.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Aneen, I'm Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
In this portion of the show, we like to bring awareness to our Minnesota wolf population. Say no to the hunts. How?
Woo! Hey, Jennifer. Hey, we have Jennifer White, our painter and owner of Post Pilgrim Gallery in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Hey, let's talk a little bit about your gallery and how people driving through Sioux Falls can find it.
All right. Well, I'm super snobby. I'm only open by appointment. I'm kind of a bum, but I'm not really a bum. I work every day. It's just some days I want to work, you know, and it requires a lot, you know. I just want to be in the zone when I'm working. But otherwise, reach out to me on Facebook. My phone number is on there, and like, just give me a call. And if there's something that you see, just reach out to me. But I had my first show at this joint. It's called Last Stop CD Shop. and this cat named Brian and his wife Janine on it. And about 15 years ago, they gave me a show there. And like, man, I sold work for the first time, and I was addicted, dude. I was like, this is the best drug I've ever done. And so, I was like, man, I'm gonna see if I can do this. I'm gonna see if I can do this for a living. And so I got into a gallery, and it was pretty fabulous. I noticed that when you put your career as an artist into the hands of other people, they want to take part in your success. They want to keep a part of it for themselves. Like, your success is their, you know, to their credit. Mm-hmm. That didn't sit right with me. And so I went to these cats years later after my first show there, and I asked if they'd be interested in financing a gallery for me, and they did. And it's wild. And this is what I tell everybody I meet: don't be afraid to ask, because what the only answer you're going to get that would be bad would be no, but you're no worse off than when you started. Sometimes it takes a little bit of bravery to be told the word no. And to be quite frank, I'm not scared of it anymore. Right. So, like, we've been working on this for about 8 years now, and we used to bring in guest artists once a month. We'd do Final Friday, but then COVID hit, mm-hmm. and traveling was not as cool as it once was, and my daughter also got diagnosed with cancer at that time, so we had to be super careful about, like, spreading germs. And South Dakota was very open, you know, it kept a lot of the doors open. A lot of people were still able to make money and live as usual. Granted, we died most per capita in the entire country, but yeah, thanks, Christina. That was super cool. Anyway, so after that kind of shut down, I closed up our main gallery and moved into a studio. And it was kind of a pivot for me in my career to be able to just represent me and my daughters, opposed to bringing in people to represent.
Yeah.
I get a focus on our careers, and they get to know us as a unit. And it's very nice being in business with these women that aren't afraid to ask questions. They want to learn the game, and they also want to be the best painters that they can be. And if that's what their dad and I can instill in them as young women, to be empowered, we're going to keep going forward with that notion.
Are you left-handed or right-handed?
I'm ambidextrous.
Uh-huh.
Right.
So yeah. I had really bad tennis elbow about a year ago, so I taught myself how to paint with my left hand.
Wow.
Yeah, it's nuts. But, like, I'd always, like, shot cool and bold with my left hand. So it's always been an ability, but, like, dude, you know, it's cool to be able to do both.
Wait a minute. You bowled left-handed?
Yeah, it's weird, right?
That's awesome.
Man, and when I was pregnant, I was a hella good bowler. I don't know.
Oh,
it was
my
weird.
Goodness.
I don't know. I was pregnant a lot. I have six kids, so it's like, yeah, we had some bowling time in.
Well, when you were pregnant, you were bowling for two, so that's probably why you were twice as good.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I had some extra energy, some good juju with me on that one, you bet.
Exactly. That's crazy.
But the gallery is doing well, and it's really groovy. I'm going to tell you a story real quick. There's a law firm here in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and, you know, it's cool, but my audience is... It's interesting, of all shapes, creeds, colors, and demographic. It's awesome. But it was a law firm, and they asked me to do a series for them. And I painted this glorious war pony. And throughout the entire piece, the American flag was represented upside down. It's hardcore Indian. It's hardcore, yeah. Like, pay attention, listen. And it's in a prominent attorney's office here. In Sioux Falls. So, like, I really enjoy being Native. And when other people see that, other Natives see it, they'll know, you know?
Yeah,
it's kind of an unspoken language that we have. But if you know, you know.
That's right. Yeah. We got the distressed American flag upside down for sure.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, we've been distress for 500 years, so
Amen. I hear that. And to kind of tag onto that, I hope what we do at Post Pilgrim, I hope it enlightens non-Native people as to who we really are. Sometimes I call it the unicorn effect, that people expect certain things out of Indian people that they wouldn't expect out of, say, meeting like a Japanese or, you know, a French person, where somehow we have magical powers. But the real power is that we love our families and we come from this earth and our belly buttons are attached to this land, and you couldn't tear us away from it if you tried. And to be able to explain that with love and pride and passion, oof, that's what we want to grow at Post Pilgrim. That is what we want to sow at Post Pilgrim.
That's beautiful. And we have one of our listeners, Santina, that is listening every day, and she said, bring Jay back on the show more often. And I vote yes, too.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Ho, you have to haul with us next time. Ho.
Ho.
Yeah.
There we go.
Hey, I got a quick question. We only got a couple minutes left. Sure. Haley, do you have one of those paintings put up again real quick? Yeah, one on the left-hand side. I don't know if you can see it. It's a pretty big picture of it looks like two women, and one's kind of, their eyes are looking different ways than their head. How long? And it's a big painting. How long did it take you to do something, a painting like that?
Oh, I'm super manic. So I'll work on a new idea on the same piece of canvas for like days. But then once I have that new idea figured out and I know it upside down, inside out, I'll knock out maybe two or three pieces in a week. I love painting. There is nothing that challenges me more. There's nothing that brings me more joy than figuring out how to become a better painter. And some of these intellectual painters, pish posh, you know, like, you'll never be, you, there's no such thing as becoming a better painter. Hell yeah, there is. I think there is. I love painting. And it's truly like reading a book. Like, once you read a book, you realize you have a million more books you need to read. That's what painting is like.
Well, Jay White, Jennifer White, we are just so happy to have you on. You're owner of Post Pilgrim Gallery in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. And what a great person you are, and we'd love to have you on again.
Oh, absolutely. I'd love it.
Right on. And then you can tell us what kind of cigarettes you smoke then next time. Oh, wow.
Virginia Super Slim, bro. That's anti-smoke. That's anti-smoke for sure, bro.
That's right. That is.
Hey,
right on. Thank you, Jay White. Hey, if you're listening to the show, you're part of the resistance. We're still here. Yeah. We are the seventh generation.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Peach Schwabba.
Dom Selvia.
Next time, our favorite Delano Democrat, Harvey Kay, will discuss the American crisis. Also, the GOP has a mandate. Should they be able to pass a stopgap spending bill without Democratic help? Tune in.
The Dom Selvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
The Badgers.
Seeds Max, fakes the three, takes the three, left side, yes sir. Pivots, fades, flips, good again. Just outside the left elbow.
Here.
Goes up, got it, with the right hand, it counts on a foul.
This is your radio home for Wisconsin Badger basketball.
Slam dunk, Steven Crow hammers it down.
Catch every game all season long right here on the Badger Sports Network from Learfield.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. The U.S. has worked to bring an end to the Russia-Ukraine war, but Russia's bombardment continues. At least 20 people were killed overnight in strikes across Ukraine. ABC's Lama Hassan has more.
These attacks come after the U.S. has cut off Ukraine's access to commercial satellite imagery, stopping military aid and sharing intelligence, all crucial for Ukraine's military to operate. One Ukrainian officer saying, "We are fighting blindly." The U.S. is increasing pressure on Ukraine into peace talks with Russia. And of course, all eyes will be on the scheduled talks in Saudi Arabia next week between
One Newark, New Jersey police officer is dead and others in critical condition after a shooting Friday. Authorities say the suspect in custody is 14 years old. In New Mexico, officials say Gene Hackman's wife died of hantavirus days before the 95-year-old actor died of heart failure. And it's day 23 in a Rome hospital for Pope Francis. The Vatican says he's resumed his morning therapy. This is ABC News. The Trump administration's indicating it will no longer honor the union rights of TSA agents, says ABC's Stephen Portnoy.
In a statement, the Homeland Security Department says it is ending collective bargaining for TSA agents, arguing it will strengthen workforce agility and